guys, I wanted to hop on and give a trigger warning before we started. We talk about sexual assault, purity culture, misogyny, sexual shame, high control religious abuse, queer phobia, homophobia, and we talk briefly about a mass shooting, which is timestamped in the episode notes. This week, we have Blair of Talk Purity to me on the podcast, and we go through your purity culture submissions and talk about your experiences as an audience and answer some questions. It's a great episode, and I hope you enjoy it. Hi, all, and welcome back to Mindful Minds. Thank you so much for joining us. Today, we are diving back into purity culture with Blair of Talk Purity to Me. How are you today?
Good. How are you?
Good. I did want to warn the listeners, I am battling a, like, it's not a sinus infection, but I went to the doctor and they basically said that my allergies are so severe that I had to be put on steroids. Like my seasonal allergies. So if I am sniffing, so sorry. I'm like on day two of steroids. So we're trying to like fix the situation, but I might be a little bit sniffy. But anyways, we were just talking about before we started recording how we've been wanting to record for a long time. And I was explaining to Blair that I started following her account like before I deconstructed. I hadn't actively started deconstructing. I hadn't left the church yet. And I started quietly following a few worldly, if you will, Instagram accounts that were giving me some outside knowledge and started to kind of step outside of my little conservative Christian bubble a little bit. And your accounts was one of the first ones that I followed because one of the first things for me that got me stepping out of evangelicalism in its entirety was purity culture, sex, and consent. And my listeners know this, but I'm a sexual assault survivor. And so I had that happen in 2018. Actually 2017, and was unpacking it during 2018, healing, you know, and started to kind of think, okay, well, I haven't heard the word consent, like hadn't been taught the word consent until I was 18 and grew up in the church. And I was like, well, if I had known, that probably would have changed the outcome of this massive trauma in my life. And so I started doing some very brief and very quiet and sneaky unpacking because I didn't want to make it too blatant to my community that I was daring to step outside of the bubble to seek outside information. But it started with like your account and a few other sex educators online. And then August McLaughlin's book, Girl Boner, were like my first little tiny steps out into the world. And so your account, I've been following for a long time, and we are basing this episode off of something that you posted a while back that was a purity culture made me blank. And when I was researching for this outline and figuring out where I wanted to direct the episode, I was thinking, okay, how do I want to, we've talked about purity culture before, do I want to just do an overall purity culture deep dive? Like, where do we want to go with it? And I saw your post and I was like, that's interesting. So I sent out a Q&A to my audience and got an unprecedented number of responses. I've never had that many people respond to a Q&A. So many of you sent in things, and so many of them were the same. There were so many doubles, triples, quadruples of people sending in almost the exact same thing of what purity culture made them feel, think, do, etc. And so I picked some ones that were, I picked the ones that got repeated the most. And then I also picked a few that we haven't really unpacked too much on the podcast before. And so what Blair and I are going to do is we're going to go through and read exactly what you guys sent in and then give our thoughts, our responses, advice, whatever on that topic. And so before we dive into that, Blair, do you want to share a little bit about your background and where Talk Purity to Me came from?
Yeah, I think I have this in common with a lot of my followers and people kind of in this corner of Instagram. I grew up in the church. You know, it was not a casual thing for me. I was very all in, as you say, in those circles on, you know, church and discipleship. And I was a discipleship leader and mission trips and, you know, all of these things. It wasn't just a casual, you know, nominal Christianity. It was very much, it was my entire life until it wasn't. And that slow kind of, I had a very slow unraveling, I guess you would say. I know a lot of people I've heard in the past few years have kind of an epiphany moment or something really major like Trump or something made them question their place in the church. That was not my experience at all. I've been away from the church for probably 10 or 11 years. And just a slow kind of progression of leaving it more and more every day since then. That's kind of a little bit about me. And in terms of how my account started, on my own personal account, which is a private page, maybe around September of 2019, I kind of put out a little post out there, like kind of gauging among my very small following of friends, you know, how has purity culture affected you in your adult life? And kind of like the post we're talking about today, I was very overwhelmed by the responses to that. And I am very much a like problem solver. I was like, okay, this is obviously something that people want to talk about. People don't really have a forum to talk about. So what am I going to do about it? And then an Instagram account just seemed like an easy thing to do. So that's kind of how it started.
Yeah, I think that's a very common progression for a lot of us. Like, I think almost everyone who has a deconstruction Instagram page, it's somewhere around like, huh, this is a problem. I had someone submit a comment to a TikTok that I posted the other day that was like, I don't understand why you do this. Like, it's the church. Do you think you're going to change the church? And I was like, I think there's a very intense misconception of why I'm doing this, because it has, for me, and it actually kind of shocked me a little bit, because I had never thought about the fact that people might look at my page and think, wow, this one person thinks that they're is like arrogant enough to think that they have the power to change the church and all of its flaws. And it wasn't someone who was pro church. It was someone who was just, you know, kind of like, you're one person. How do you think you're going to do this? And it really shocked me, because I was like, oh no, I have not communicated this well. I'm not doing this for the church. Like, this is not me trying to change the church. And if for some reason, some random person who's very involved in the church sees my content and kind of starts thinking about, is what I'm doing ethical, or starts, you know, rethinking the ethics and the values that they hold, and if they're just, and that's fantastic. That would be like a huge bonus. My content has always been for the people who already experienced the trauma and are trying to find coping skills and tools and resources and community to heal. That's always been the I guess, mission, to be quasi-religious, of any content that I make that is like deconstruction centered. And from what I've, the deconstruction stuff I've done on my page, it has been pretty overwhelming that people seem to be drawn to the purity culture content the most. Like, it's the content that the most people interact with. It's the content that my podcasts that are like the most streamed are most of my purity culture episodes. It's people that just like really want to dive in. And I think it's a testament to how harmful it is that there's a lot of harmful shit that goes down in evangelicalism. But like, it's amazing that the thing that seems to be the most pervasive is purity culture, and people just repeatedly communicating, no, this did an immense amount of harm to me. And I love the thing that you said earlier on about you're leaving it more every day. I think that's a fantastic way to put it, because as much as I am like cut off from the church, like I am done, I'm out, it's still a pretty daily thing where I will talk to my partner who did not grow up evangelical, and I'll disclose something of like, oh yeah, this is what we did, or oh yeah, I had this really traumatic experience at like a church camp, and he's just shocked. And I'm like, oh, okay, maybe I need to like dive into that a little more. Maybe that was a little more unusual than I realized. And so I think that's kind of what a lot of us are doing, is we've already left, or we've already, you know, started to process some of these things that harmed us. And we're just slowly day by day trying to like unpack it a little more and unlearn a little more and you know, figure out how to adjust and pivot. Because for many of us, like, we were raised in this. This is what was ingrained into our brains, singing Bible verse songs at age four. Like, it starts in, from a very deep rooted, you know, part of us and a really young age. And it can be really difficult to unpack. And the sexual part of it is really difficult as a child, but I found it way more difficult as an adult because now I'm actually sexually active and I'm having to like confront the shame on a daily basis and confront the way that I view others, even if it's not just my sex life, even if it's like me, you know, kind of correcting and questioning, why do I think that someone is promiscuous if they have more than one partner? Like, why is that thought in my brain? How do I start to unpack that? Where did that come from? And so we can kind of just, we can just dive in, I guess. I mean, we've got a lot of really interesting send-ins. And like I said, I think at one point I'm trying to figure out if I want to just read all of them and we can just go over them, but maybe I'll save some of them for later. Cause there's literally too many to include in one episode. But one of the first ones we got sent in, this got repeated multiple times, was purity culture made me not able to trust myself, my thoughts, my intuition, and my body. Do you want to dive into that first?
Sure. Yeah. I mean, I think that is, it's not surprising to me that that was sent in a bunch of times. I think that is true for most, if not every, you know, all people who grow up kind of in the purity culture ideology. And I think that it is, you know, the reason why purity culture is this huge topic for a lot of people still, even people who've been away from the church for 10 years or, you know, don't even think about the church anymore, it can still be really impactful on your life because it does shape the way that you think about yourself, your place in the world, your own desires, your emotions, romantic interests. I mean, it informs all of the so many aspects of your life because it's not just about sex and it was never just about sex. It's understanding your sexuality and embracing that is just part of being a person. So that's why it's so difficult to unpack it all because you can, you know, be a sexually active person who grew up in purity culture and still have all these other hangups that you haven't really worked through yet. Cause it's, again, it's not just about sex. It's about so many aspects of being human and embracing yourself and understanding yourself and others.
Yeah. And I've noticed too, one of the things about the intuition and listening to myself is I think people who were raised as women and socialized as women in the church got taught in all facets of life that you're not allowed to desire, you're not allowed to be joyful, like seek things that bring you joy, seek things that bring you pleasure, say no to things that don't. It's very much so you live by pleasing others and serving others. And it's just kind of, and I also didn't grow up in a evangelical environment that was crazy heavy on the, like, the wife should be in the home. But even outside of that narrative, it was still very much so an omission, I guess, where it wasn't as much an anti women can't have things for themselves and like can't think about themselves, but it was more that they only talked about men doing that. Like, there was never a conversation that women got to have things that were for them or that made them happy. And then once self-care, once that word got into like the cultural zeitgeist and started like picking up and you see all the Instagram infographics about self-care, then I would see sermons about like how self-care is selfish and how it's not biblical. And if you think about it, like, that all ties back to the idea that like pleasure and masturbation and sex can be a form of self-care and it brings you pleasure. And it always kind of comes back to this, like, you're not allowed to have anything for yourself. And I think one of the things that's so contradictory about seeking pleasure and then like the gospel is there's kind of this whole idea in evangelical Christianity of you're doing everything to serve God. You're doing everything for a purpose. Let's say you're a singer. be on the worship team. Use your talent for God. Let's say you are a great public speaker. Hop up there and preach. Do it for God. You can't have anything that's just yours. It's always to serve someone else. And masturbation is for you. It's not for anybody else. Mm-hmm. Whereas there would be times where there'd be conversations about sex in, for women, but it would be, how do you serve your husband? It was still for someone else. And I've always heard so much like pushback with masturbation, the idea of trusting your own body and learning how your body likes to be touched and learning what you like and what you enjoy and what's pleasurable for you. And that's all really condemned. And I think it comes down to like a really significant root issue of like the patriarchy, I guess, of just like women not allowing to have things, like we're not allowed to have things for ourselves. And so that was one of the things that I've learned spans way past sex for me. It's like, yeah, it was difficult to get past the shame of masturbation and the shame of sexual pleasure and the shame of listening to myself and not just listening to God and not listening to my husband or my partner or whatever. But it also spread into like, I wasn't used to being able to say no to going to church because I always had to go to church on Sundays, whether I was exhausted, overstimulated, you know, didn't have enough in my social energy tank, I still had to go to church. It wasn't an option. And when I left church, I was just talking about, I just did an Instagram live where we were talking about Sundays in church because it's Sunday today. And we were talking about the fact that it took me a really long time after I left religion to like figure out how I was going to spend my Sundays because I kept trying to like set a schedule and like do things on Sundays that like were helpful to people and that were, you know, good and like felt ethically, I don't know, like added to my ethical tank or something, because I was so used to my Sundays being like for someone else. They were never, I could never take time and just say, well, maybe I'm too tired to do that today. Maybe I need to sleep in. It was always just someone else. And you see the same narrative of laziness like preached in the church, where if you're not doing things for other people constantly, you're not constantly volunteering, you're not constantly serving God, you're lazy, or you're, you know, what it's always, there's always like morals attached to literally just taking care of yourself, which is like the weirdest hill to die on, in my opinion. But I think it plays a lot into sex and just life, and also like your intuition and your body, because it's always seen that if you want something, it's of the world, it's sinful. It's a desire that like Satan gave you. And it's like, or I just fucking want an orgasm. Like, let's take a breath. It doesn't need to be like that serious and that heavy.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's kind of, you know, just, it's just a lack of personhood, you know, and just a lack of humanity. Obviously our, you know, humanity isn't really recognized in the church. And I think sexuality is a big part of that. And, but yes, it does bleed into all of these other aspects of being a person, taking care of yourself, recognizing your boundaries, and, you know, being able to express those and, you know, make choices for yourself.
Yeah. Boundaries is a big one. That's like another thing I found so common in things that were hard for me, but then also things that people sent in and people ask about. It's just like, how do I say no to my family because I don't want to go to church? How do I say no to my partner? I don't want to have sex. How do I say no to a leadership position at church? How do I say no to a volunteer position? It's just this constant anxiety and shame and guilt about not being able to say no, because if someone, and I do think it comes down to the fact that I, this is kind of funny, but my deconstruction and deconversion was aligned with politics. It was a like Trump. Mm-hmm. And then I was like, no, I can't do this. And I started viewing American politics and was like, because I also grew up in a Christian school. And fun thing about some Christian schools, they don't teach you about politics. Weird curriculum thing where like I never took a politics class. I never took like a political science class or like anything. And so I got to community college and took my first political science class and was like, oh, that's what the electoral college is. Like, I should know that as an adult. That's a big one. That's not a great thing to not be aware of. And I was thinking about just politics and, you know, I don't know, the leadership system of the world. And I was like, huh, it feels kind of fucked up that we have like one person in charge. I know there's like other groups of people that all inform each other, but I was like, the American structure of politics, I don't think is great. But then I started thinking about churches and I was like, It's way worse in a church, where a lot of churches have boards or elders that actually don't really do anything. And it's kind of the head pastor gets the say. If he can make mistakes, he can still bounce back. He can have scandals, he can still bounce back, all of these things. And it started kind of unraveling my view of, like, it was one of those moments where I'm like, oh my God, everything's unraveling. I don't know how to approach any of this because I feel like everything that I thought was good is bad. And during that whole time period, I started having like a really significant, like, okay, wait a second. I've been assigning all of these morals to things just because some random dude in a suit behind a pulpit told me to. Like, that's so dumb. And it really kind of was one of those, like, you know, very, okay, now I'm going to view my life entirely differently moments, where it just kind of hit me of like a, hang on, why is this one random guy the guy that is like dictating how I live my life? That's so bizarre. And I had this very angry, frustrated, well, now I need to be independent, now I need to be freed reaction. And it was kind of one of the things that just shot me out of the church, because I was like, this is stupid. Like, I'm an adult now. I don't have my parents telling me what to do. Why do I have some random white guy telling me that I can't have sex? Like, that's really dumb. And it really frustrated me. And It then took a really long time, and I'm still working on it, to learn how to listen to myself instead of constantly seeking approval or instruction from other people. And we talked about it in our episode with Sarah of Deconstructing Purity Culture, but we had a conversation about like the pipeline from religion to abusive relationships, because you get out of religion and a lot of folks then find another bossy authority figure in their partner to tell them what to do and tell them what they're supposed to eat and wear and act. And it, you kind of just go from one high control environment to the next. And it makes it really difficult to like learn what your body's telling you, learn like, oh, I'm shaking, my hands are shaking. Oh, that's not the Holy Spirit. I have anxiety. Like, even things like that you don't think of. It's right. Like, okay, wow, I have no awareness of what my body or my brain are trying to tell me, because it's all been so warped.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's a huge, just a huge part of leaving and figuring yourself out. I know it took me many years to just not even to be able to trust, but just to like be able to recognize emotions or anything like that. I was just so disconnected from my body, my emotions. Like, I don't even, it's hard to describe unless you also know that feeling, because it just was like completely, you know, I was like over
pure
here.
Disassociation.
Yeah, just really like living that way for my whole life.
Right.
And it's hard to, yeah, it's for anyone who hasn't been through it, it is hard to describe, I think. But yeah, that was, I mean, I think that's reality for a lot of people. And that's kind of how we're taught, you know, we're not taught to question or, you know, rely on our own feelings. Like you're talking about, it's all about the Holy Spirit, or the Holy Spirit through your pastor, or whatever it may be.
Yeah. And I mean, this is probably a different episode, but that doesn't even touch the, like, what if you just have OCD and you think that your intrusive thoughts are the Holy Spirit? And it's just like, and that's, I think that's one of the reasons why it's so brutally confusing from an intuition perspective. I think the Holy Spirit fucks with that hard, because it's like, you don't learn. A person who's raised in a non-religious household has some idea of knowing what your consciousness is. Oh, that's my conscience. That's kind of like my gut instinct telling me maybe not to do that. Maybe that's not smart. And there's not as much learning, I guess, of having to figure out what your gut instinct is telling you to do. Whereas in the church, you go from having this okay, there's this random spirit thing that's in my head and in my body because I accepted Jesus that's telling me what to do. But then what's the difference between that and my conscience? And like, what's the difference between that and my gut instinct? And because that voice has been so polluted with like shame and indoctrination and all these different like things that we've all had to unlearn and unpack, for me, I like couldn't figure out what was my personal intuition and what was like had been polluted by the idea of the Holy Spirit. And the example I give often is like, there was a time where I was in a movie theater and it was during the height of a lot of movie theater mass shootings. And so I was feeling very anxious and very on edge and was sitting in a movie theater, saw a guy come and sit down next to me. And I was convinced that the Holy Spirit had told me that like this man was going to shoot up the movie theater and I needed to leave to like save me and my father. And so I started crying and I'm like 14. And I was like, Dad, we have to leave. We have to leave. Like the Holy Spirit told me we have to go. And my dad is also incredibly religious. So he's like, all right, like, let's go. So we leave. And I was like monitoring that, the news, trying to see if I was right. And nothing ever came up. And I was like, huh, I'm confused. Did us leaving like stop him from doing the bad deed? Like what happened? And it happened a few more times where I would have these horrible anxiety rushes at like concerts or crowded events or whatever. And then I realized that like that wasn't the Holy Spirit. I just live in the US and have intense anxiety about violent acts being committed while I'm just going about my daily life. And it took me a really long time to figure out that that wasn't some crazy spiritual force telling me that I needed to leave to save my life. It was just anxiety of being like, I feel kind of awkward. And it also could have been a little bit of a gut instinct thing where like, I'm a woman and a lot of women grow up in the like in the mindset of having to be pretty paranoid and pretty aware of their surroundings to protect themselves. Right. But because I was not taught about anything besides the Holy Spirit, there was no question in my mind that this was none of those things. It was this amazing spiritual force that was saving my life. And it's been something that like, I didn't even realize I had to unpack until like a year ago, where I was like, someone was asking me like, yeah, well, part of trauma healing is, you know, listening to your gut instinct. And I was like, I don't know if I have one of those. Like, I don't quite know how to listen to that.
Still now, I don't know if I totally understand what intuition is. Like, sometimes I still question. I'm like, you know what I'm saying? It's like, I think I do, but then I question it. I'm like, well, is that intuition? Or,
Or is it anxiety? Like, or is it leftover spiritual shit?
Yeah, exactly. Like, I still, that's still something that I'm, like, figuring out. It's not.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a learning, definitely a lifelong learning thing.
Yeah, well, and because I've never grown up in a body that wasn't raised in religion, I have no idea if other people have more clarity on that or if that's just a human thing. Like maybe all humans feel a little confused about their intuition, or if that's a, no, I grew up in Christianity. Like that's why I'm confused.
Yeah.
And then we can do the next one, I guess. We've got purity culture made me repress my queerness, which I mean, I think that's a very fair and very common experience. I've noticed that as an individual, it hasn't been repressing queerness. It's been in just intense internalized homophobia about other people. And because it was so drilled into my head that gay people were bad, trans people were bad, these people were evil, they were going to go to hell, that even when I had queer friends and had been introduced to queerness, and that's a huge thing about religion is a lot of the times these people that they're villainizing, because they're not allowed in these spaces that you grow up in, you've never met a queer person or you've never interacted with a trans person. And there's no ability to like meet that person and, like you said, bring humanity to the situation and say, oh, hang on, you're not that bad. I'm confused. Like, I thought you were supposed to be like the devil and you're actually totally fine. And so once I started having a lot of queer folks in my community that I loved so deeply, I would just feel so awful and guilty and hate myself so much because I would still have these little bits of homophobia that would pop up and these little fearful, you know, twinges and shameful twinges. And even I just read Evelyn, The Seven Husbands of Evelyn Hugo, which is a very queer book. And even reading, like reading, yeah, it's a surprise. It's a queer book. Sorry to anyone that I just spoiled that for, but it's super gay. And I was reading it and I was having like these, like a hard time reading queer sex scenes. Like it was like difficult for me. And I kind of took a beat and was like, okay, what the fuck is going on? Like every best friend I have, every close person in my life is queer. Like I am just surrounded by a sea of queer people that I love so deeply and have talked with about their lives and growing up in the church and what that did to them. And it was so interesting to see that this like internalized homophobia that was just, you know, honestly, that I got like pretty heavily brainwashed as a kid, that it still was sticking around after I've been out of the church for 3 years, have unpacked so much of that internalized homophobia. And yet I haven't ever read a queer book with queer sex scenes. And it was jarring to me. And I was like, oh, whoa, I don't think I'm supposed to be reading this. And then I was like, wait, I'm allowed to read this. Like, I'm not 12. Like this is not bad. I'm fine. But I did notice my initial reaction was hesitation and a little bit of shame and a little bit of guilt. And I had to kind of take a beat and take a breath and think, okay, is this actually what I feel? Or is this some of the evangelical Sunday school bubbling up years later?
Yeah. I mean, I think that's, again, just like a very common experience for a lot of people. And I think it's really important to name that because, you know, for most people, you're not going to go from one way of thinking about a thing to a different way of thinking about that. You know, what we're talking about here being queer people or queer relationships, queer love, whatever, you know, it's very hard to overnight just completely unpack that. But I do think it's important, again, because we, you know, to recognize our biases and like the internal things that we deal with that come up in those moments of, oh, right, I didn't think I would have this reaction, or I'm really surprised. And, you know, you can get in these like shame cycles where you're like, now I feel ashamed that I feel weird about this. And like,
exactly.
You can really like, yeah, start to spiral about it if you are a person who is trying to unpack those feelings or be in relationship with queer people. And like, kind of like back to the prompt about repressing your queerness, like, I mean, I just want to say for anyone who like, that's their experience, you did that to survive. And I think there's no shame in that. And I know it's very painful and it doesn't diminish the pain of that, but you were not in a safe space or a safe environment that was going to be accepting of you. And you did the best thing you could have done for yourself at that time. Most likely because, yeah, I mean, you've gotten yourself hopefully to a place where you can accept yourself more and you found people to accept you or who will accept you. And, you know, I think that there's kind of a, sometimes like these later in life queer folks who, you know, they come to accept their sexuality later in life, there can be like just some stigma or some negative feeling about that experience, about not totally, you know, figuring it out until later. But that is completely understandable given the environment that you were in at the time where you may have been trying to push down those feelings because you knew what would happen if you expressed those.
All All right. For those of you who have been here for a bit, you've heard me talk about my pup, Stevie Ray. When Stevie was a puppy, she had some undiagnosed food allergies that resulted in her being super itchy. Luckily, we found Scouts Honor. Scouts Honor's products are probiotic and are lifesavers for pups with sensitive skin, who are prone to itchiness, or if you just want your pup to have the softest fur ever. We exclusively use Scouts Honor and have for the past 2.5 years. We love their unscented shampoo and conditioner and their probiotic paw spray, which is amazing for Frito-Toe pups. On top of their amazing products, with every bottle bought, they provide a meal for an animal in need. If you have a pet, I would highly encourage looking into Scouts Honor. And listeners of the podcast can use the code MINDFULMINDS for 20% off of a purchase of $50 or more. Again, that's code MINDFULMINDS for top-notch doggy grooming. I have been asked from so many people, how did you start your podcast? The answer is simple, Buzzsprout. I had no production experience when I started the show, and I used Buzzsprout's blog and website to teach myself how to get started. Buzzsprout not only lists your show on all major streaming platforms, but you also get access to a website, audio players, and custom sound bites. If you are looking to launch your dream podcast or you're looking for a new platform, Buzzsprout is the way to go. You can follow the link in our show notes to receive a $20 credit towards your membership, and you will be supporting our show. Happy podcasting!
Yeah, I think there's so many situations in abusive and high control environments where you did things to survive, and it can be so shameful to confront those when you're out of that situation and to feel like, oh, I was a bad person, or oh, I made bad decisions, or oh, I wasn't authentic to myself. And I just think there needs to be I think it's helpful to approach it from an endless supply of grace, which is so much easier said than done. Like, it's so easy to be like, oh, be nice to yourself. And then it's like in your head, it's just like not, doesn't feel possible. But as outside sources, I guess, like, you deserve that grace. And I always try to, I refer to anything under age 18 as a baby. Intentionally, especially with myself when I'm reflecting on like my own memories, I'll be like, because I was a horribly homophobic person as a teenager, incredibly homophobic. One of the most embarrassing, shameful moments of my Christian journey, looking back, was I tried to argue with a lesbian teenager about the fact that she couldn't be a lesbian. It was a sin. She was going to hell. I did that to someone else. And it is something that is like brutally heartbreaking as an adult. It's the honestly probably the most shameful thing of my life that it keeps me awake at night. I've tried to find her, can't find her. I'd love to reach out to her and chat, but I do approach that with, for one, a lot of reflection and self-awareness and acknowledgement that I need to change the way that I think, and I did. And then I also look at it from a lens of the internalized homophobia and I was a parrot for the adults around me. I was not in an environment where I was exposed to other human experiences. I was not in an environment where I was able to access certain levels of critical thinking because of how high control the environment was. And so the person that I was in that environment was not someone that I was proud of. And it's one of the reasons why anytime I talk about myself leaving religion, I get a lot of responses on TikTok of like religion doesn't have to be bad. And like, it's okay to be a Christian. And my viewpoint is you are more than welcome and should be encouraged to pursue any type of religious freedom that you would like. If religion is something that helps you and heals you and makes you feel safe, gives you a purpose to live, I think it can be a very beneficial thing for some people. I was a person who was discriminatory and harmful and abusive in Christianity. That was who I was in Christianity. It's not okay to be the type of person that I was. That's not an okay expression of religion. It's not okay to use a religion to harm and discriminate and ostracize groups of people. And that's what I was doing. And I was doing it because the adults in my life were doing it. And so I was just a parrot. And what they said I took as the Bible, because that's what I was taught to do from an incredibly young age. And so there was a lot of unpacking as an adult of, I was a baby and I was doing what I could to survive, to exist in that environment, to earn affection and love and acceptance from the adults in my life. And it was an overall abusive environment. And it's also one of the things where if you're in an abusive marriage and you're being hit and you do something that you regret later in life, you were doing what you could to survive. And I view leaving religion as a very similar parallel experience in the sense that it's really hard to acknowledge that religious trauma is abuse. And I know that that can get, I know I was always taught that abuse is like you get slapped or you get punched and then that's it.
Right.
And it was very hard for me as an adult to accept that, you know, verbal abuse is abuse, spiritual abuse is abuse. There's all these different types of emotional abuse, all these things that I never actually registered as abuse. And when you grow up in an abusive environment, as much as it's so important to recognize, acknowledge, and correct things that you did as a kiddo and learning how to grow and be a better person after that, I also try to like really hold grace for that small version of myself and hold her, yes, hold her responsible because it was me and I did things that I'm not proud of, but also give her grace in the sense of, yes, I was responsible, but also I was operating under a very different mindset that was incredibly abusive and high control from other people. And so it's a tricky, nuanced, like it's my decisions, but it also the decisions of the church. And now that I am in an environment that's not high control, I do have autonomy. I am able to be very aware and free of how I act and think. I can enter situations from a completely different lens and self-correct and be self-aware and seek out other human experiences so that I'm not ever, hopefully, at risk of doing those things again and not getting myself into situations like that. But it's very complicated and nuanced and shameful and hard. And it's an icky thing to try to like forgive yourself out of those situations for survival tactics.
Yeah, it really is. I mean, and that's just the, you know, daily kind of figuring out who you are outside of all of that, outside of all of the things that you were taught and all of the things that you were told, you know, this is who you are. Yeah, it's a process for sure.
Yes, very much so. Okay. I'm actually going to flip the order that we were going to do these in, cause I think two come like there's two that are pretty similar and aligned and I think feed off of each other. So the first one is purity culture made me too scared to ask for help from anyone at all when I had my first sexual experience. And then I want to follow that with purity culture made me cry on my honeymoon after having sex for the first time. I felt empty and disgusting. I want to pair those because for folks who wait until marriage to have sex, which I also would like to clarify something because I get this on my TikTok constantly where people are like, you're telling people they can't wait to have sex. No, I'm not. I don't give a shit if you wait to have sex. I just want to make sure it's like your decision. If you want to wait until marriage, that's so fantastic. Good for you. I just think it's important to not assign a higher moral value to waiting until marriage because that's when we get into the tricky like slut shaming narrative where it's I'm a better person than you because I waited until marriage. That I don't agree with. But you are an adult. You're autonomous. Do whatever the fuck you want with your body. That's the whole point. But with that being said, I think for one, if you're young and have your first sexual experience, if it's a sexual assault, you don't have the freedom because there's so much shame with sex that you don't have the freedom to inquire and ask for questions about, you know, even like preventative care of like how do I use a condom? How do I not get an STI? How do I not get pregnant? How do I learn how to communicate and set boundaries within sex? Because that's something that doesn't get taught by the church or society. And so you can get into sexual environments and realize, oh, fuck, like the way that I'm having sex right now is like a little uncomfortable. How do I tell my partner that without it being awkward? Like, how do I communicate that? And you're not taught that at all. And so it can lead to really uncomfortable, potentially dangerous environments. And then simultaneously, even if you're married, you don't magically learn how to have sex just because you have a fucking ring on your finger. And so you can get into situations where you're on your honeymoon night and you don't know what the fuck you're doing because you never got taught. And it isn't this like intuitive skill that humans have. Yes, you can figure out where to put it, But aside from that, like the sex ed and the preventative and the communication and the consent, if you're not taught that, that's not really an intuitive skill for most people. And so it can lead to a lot of confusion, shame, abuse, harm in marriage and outside of marriage. It's a situation that happens in both situations, which purity culture assumes that once you're married, having sex, it's the best sex in the world. Everything's fantastic. You're doing it for Jesus. It's great. And that's really mm-hmm. not the case for most folks.
Yeah. I mean, and just bottom line is most adults will have sex at some point in their life, right?
Yeah.
That's the reality for most people. Some people yes. aren't interested in sex. And again, for those people, no issue. But yep. yeah, just the level of information control around sex, I don't really think can be overstated. 'Cause mm-hmm. we're really not given any information other than it's amazing as long as you're married, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like you were saying, like, there's no talk about the mechanics of it, really, you know, unless you figure it out from your friends or from Cosmo magazine or something like that, you know.
Right.
You know, there's, and I mean, I think that is a human rights violation at the end of the day. And,
yeah.
you know, the UN agrees with that. not teaching people about human sexuality is depriving them of a very basic right. And, yeah. you know, we're getting like, that's maybe a little high level. If we zoom into the church, it's not just not giving information. It's also giving bad information that, you know, things you and your partner will just figure it out.
Right.
That it's just gonna work out. You know, as long as you love them and they love you, you're just, it's gonna be fine. And as long as, you know, the wife and the relationship is sacrificial of herself and, you know, always available, then the sex life is gonna be great. And everything is going to be wonderful and God is just going to bless it. And we know that that's not true, obviously. And very few people want to talk about it, obviously, in the church, because when you don't get the thing that you were promised, you start to think that, oh, it's not the sex or the relationship that's the problem. It's me.
Mm.
And I think that most of the time, it is women in relationships who internalize that. I'm talking about within the church. Like, you know,
yeah.
you start thinking the problem is you.
Yeah.
And that you're broken, or, you know, you might have vaginismus and that is, you know, a punishment for something, or it just might not be working and God's punishing you. For some reason.
Right.
So it's bad information. It's a lack of real comprehensive sex ed. And yeah, it's obviously a huge hindrance on people and navigating a healthy sex life, even though they were, you know, promised it would be amazing.
Yeah. And I mean, even aside from just the mechanics, like, it's so unrealistic to expect the shame to disappear when you have a ring, because if you're taught your entire life these horrible, scary stories about like sex and these shaming ideas of what it means and how you lose a part of yourself, that doesn't just disappear when you have a ring. I've heard from so many people who got married young and
mm-hmm.
had their first time having sex and weren't out of the church and were still very indoctrinated with purity culture and experienced this like horrible first time of having sex where they felt like they lost a part of themselves, even if it was to their husband, because that narrative doesn't change. And I had penetrative sex for the first time, because we all know that the lovely church, there's some funny little loopholes within the way that people approach sex. So I did everything else besides penetrative sex because I thought that that was like the way to get around it. But the first time I had penetrative sex, I was already out of the church. I was 20. So I was like, you know, a little bit further away from some of the indoctrination. Had sex with a non-religious person. And he knew my background with sexual assault. He knew my background with the church. And he knew that I had some anxiety about the idea of, like, if I have sex for the first time, am I going to, like, feel this deep emotional shame? Am I going to have this tie to someone? And anytime I tell someone what I talk about it quite often, my story of having sex for the first time, a lot of people are kind of amused by it because I'm a very black or white person and I go from 0 to 100. And so I was just so over the church. I'm so annoyed. Like, I was just so annoyed. It really came from a place of annoyance. And I had been having a relationship with someone for a long time that was like in the church, and we were kind of like bouncing around everything, just not actually having penetrative sex. And I was getting really fed up. I was just like, this is just like, this is silly. This is annoying. And so we broke up. And then like within 6 months, I was on a quest to lose my virginity. I was like, I gotta get it done. I'm so annoyed. And when I had sex for the first time, it was with someone that was kind of like a friend. We weren't really romantic. And it was more educational than it was passionate. It was more of like a sex ed lesson. And literally, like right after, he was like, God didn't smite you. How do you feel? Like, I think you're in the clear. And I was like, hey, you're right. Like, he didn't smite me. I think I'm okay. And it was a little bit shocking to me because it was my experience was so casual and there was so little intense emotion or attachment. And I was expecting it to be this thing where like, after I had sex with him, I was going to like really want to marry him, or I was going to never be able to get over him. We broke up like 2 months later and then stayed friends for like 2 years. And it was not a big deal at all. There was no soul tie. It wasn't like Velcro. I didn't feel like I lost a part of myself to him. I haven't spoken to him in 4 years. He's a great guy. Like, I don't care. It like, it was nothing serious. And it was so shocking to me because I had this indoctrination for so long and it was in my household. There was a lot of emphasis put on the, you're going to lose part of yourself if you do it before marriage, and it's going to hurt your mental health. And like, you'll never be able to get over that person. They'll always have a part of you. And it was so comical to me that I had this incredibly casual sexual experience and then couldn't give less of a fuck about, like, I wasn't tied to that person whatsoever. We were never officially in a relationship. It was nothing serious. And it was so casual. I was friends with him for 2 years while he was in a serious relationship with someone else. Like, there was no territorialness. There was no shame or attachment. Right. It was just so casual that I was like, wait, what the fuck? Like, I have been sold an absolute crock of shit. Like, I was convinced that I was going to be so deprived and empty. And it was so not a big deal that it really shocked me. And then you have people on the other side of the spectrum who are so indoctrinated and it can't get that shame out of their head that even when it's in a marriage, they still feel like they lost a part of themselves and they can't get past that loss and that grief of feeling like they, you know, lost this sacred gift, even if they gave the sacred gift, quote unquote, to their husband. It's still present. And so it's so interesting how it can impact people in very different ways, but it doesn't quite seem to ever align with what the church said it was going to, if that makes sense. I've heard the if you have sex before marriage, you're going to be empty. I know so many people who do not feel that way. If you have sex within a marriage, you're going to feel full and fulfilled. I know so many people who do not feel that way. And so it's interesting how, I mean, I think at this point it's relatively obvious that it was just a crock of shit, but it's interesting how it can really vary from person to person, and either way can be it's still an enormous amount of shame to try to get past, and you really don't have a lot of tools to figure that out. Even it's hard in therapy. A lot of therapists aren't super keen on learning how to unpack religious trauma, so it can be a really difficult thing to get through because it you weren't taught it as a child. And then there's also not a lot of real world resources, which I think is why there are so many Instagram accounts, because all of us are trying to give our personal experience and try to help people out.
Yeah, I think that's so true. And I think it's kind of what you're talking about with, you know, I kind of feel like kind of what you're saying, you know, sex can mean to you whatever you want it to mean. If you think that it's no big deal, great. If you think it's a sacred energy exchange and that's what works for you and that's the belief system that you have around sex that feels meaningful to you, also fine. Do what works for you. But I think that there's a lot of people growing up in the church who are really emotionally stunted about sex, and it's just, you know, we don't have all of the resources to be able to process emotions about sex, because you have all this buildup about what it is and what it means and what it's going to feel like. And when it doesn't, you are like scrambling to try to figure out why. Or, you know, if you do have sex and it, you know, you have all these ideas about a soul tie, but then you really, you don't feel that way afterwards. You're kind of like trying to figure that out as well.
It's what am I missing? Just, did I do something wrong?
Right. Like the not having the emotional tools to understand what sex will or won't feel like or mean to you is also a really big part of that, I think.
Yeah. And I think it can be confusing too, because it can shift. Like my first sexual experiences out of Christianity, I went through my hoe phase, which I am incredibly proud of and think it was actually very beneficial and helpful for me. But it was a ton of random casual sex. It was just like, didn't really mean anything to me. It was a lot of, honestly, like actual sex education in real time was what a lot of it was. And then I've also had sexual experiences that were so meaningful and that felt like it was so rooted in love and was so important to me. And I look like I really like it meant so much more and had so much more emotional value. And it can shift. It can totally shift person to person, relationship to relationship. And so I think that was a thing that was surprising for me to learn as well, because I was expecting everything to be so intense and heavy and connected and emotional. And I wasn't expecting it to be as casual as it was for some of my sexual experiences. And that was a little shocking to me as well. And it did take quite a bit of time to unpack the casualness of it, because I felt a lot of shame for casual sex. That was something that I immediately went into, oh no, am I being hypersexual? Is this a problem? Am I coping with sex? Am I a whore? Like, what do I do? And it really was like quite jarring to begin with. And the only reason I think why I was able to approach it and kind of address the shame, acknowledge it, and then walk past it was because I had consciously filled up, honestly, my online space with a ton of sex educators. I was following every sex educator that I could. And I was doing a ton of social research, and I was writing papers on sex ed in college. It was like, it was kind of the center of my life at that time, because I was so interested in it because I had never learned about it. And I think the combination of that experience with me actively having this shame and this confusion while having casual sex really helped me battle the shame in real time, because I had all of these other resources from sex ed and books and podcasts and all of these things that I was able to, yes, I'm hearing shame from my internal indoctrination, but then I'm also feeding myself with all of this really healthy information about sex and the other ear from all of these resources and tools. And I think if I hadn't been doing that, the shame would have been incredibly overwhelming. But because I just so happened to honestly have a really intense hyperfixation on sex ed at the time, it kind of was able to cancel out some of the shame. And I think that if you don't happen to have some random hyperfixation on sex ed while you're also engaging with a lot of purity culture shame, the shame can really overtake you and can be very overwhelming. And I was kind of lucky enough that the stars aligned in a way where I was able to kind of bypass it. But it also can be really surprising how much it can come up years later, where I will think I'm totally over purity culture shame. And then all of a sudden, I feel small and little and ashamed and inferior on a random Tuesday. That can be pretty jarring, too.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's kind of just a big theme to just remember, you know, you don't have to get to your destination, whatever, you know, sexual freedom and like a healthy sex life feels like for you. You're not going to get there overnight, and no one would expect you to. And so I hope that if you're listening right now and that's where how you feel, that you're, you know, you feel shame that you're not further along, or you feel shame that you still feel shame, or, you know, whatever it is, like, you're not going to get there overnight. And that is okay. And that is normal. And, you know, if you start to close off those parts of yourself, and instead of working through the shame, you just start sort of like suppressing it, you're just going to get yourself in another cycle of, you know, some unhealthy habits as well. You got to really just be patient. Be patient with yourself.
Yeah. Which is, I think, the most difficult thing of any trauma healing ever is the grace and the patience and the forgiveness, especially when you come from a high control environment that is so shame-based and is so centered on sin, what's not sinful. You constantly are taught to evaluate yourself at every turn of, am I doing something wrong? Oh, yeah. Am I doing something sinful? Would God hate that I'm doing this? And so even just losing, like unpacking and unlearning that is something that can take years, which is so frustrating and can get really exhausting at times, because it's like, well, what the fuck? I didn't sign up for this. I was raised in Christianity. Like, this is bullshit. And it can be really frustrating. And the only, I mean, I am still actively going through it, and I'm not a therapist, and I don't have probably the best advice on it, but I would just say the only thing that's been helpful for me is just, I know the whole healing isn't linear phrase has been beaten to death and is used all the time, but I try really hard to just constantly remind myself and also give myself breaks from healing, if that makes sense. If I'm if I'm too exhausted from healing, and I'm too exhausted from actively unlearning and reading the books and listening to the podcasts and doing the journaling and doing the therapy, I've gone to therapy and literally told my therapist, like, I'm really tired. I don't really want to do EMDR right now. Like, I don't think I can fucking handle that. Can we just like talk about my week and or skip the next 3 weeks and I'll just like talk to you later?
Yeah.
Because sometimes it's just too much. Sometimes it's too exhausting. And I went through two really significant traumas right out of high school, right after like my first year of college. I spent the next 4 years unpacking an insane amount of trauma, trying to heal from that. And then I hit like 21, 22 and was out of college. And I was trying to unpack, you know, childhood stuff. And I literally told my therapist, I was like, we gotta hit the brakes, because I've been actively healing and unlearning for 5 years. And I cannot keep doing it. I'm going to burn myself, not just out, like burn myself down. Why will be gone? I won't be able to handle this. And so we adjusted to just talking about whatever was happening that week and centering on more like present issues. If it was like, oh, I had a bad week, or I had a this, like, let's just focus on that instead of doing these deep dive healing journeys, because I just didn't have the energy for it. And I think that as much as it's important to unlearn and unpack so that you're not hurting other folks, it's also important to like take a breath and recognize your limits, because no one can heal 24/7. It's not sustainable. It's so exhausting.
Yeah.
And so if you're exhausted from healing, you can also take a break. You're allowed to take a break and just have fun for a little bit and not just be unpacking and unlearning all the time, because it's very tiring.
Yeah. I think there's a lot of pressure when you leave the church to just like magically, you know, fix yourself or unpack all your shit like as quickly as possible. And yeah, I mean, that is not sustainable for almost anyone. Like, I mean, if that's what you've done, like, amazing. But Yeah, that's not going to work for most people. And yeah, that is okay, too.
Yeah, for sure. Well, let's do one more and then we can end because we're about at time here. But how about we end on purity culture made me make and commit to adult decisions at way too young of an age. This is one that we hadn't talked about before and I think is so valid. And I have been trying to figure out and unpack why I had, and I didn't even think about this as a purity culture thing until I posted it on TikTok. And then everyone else was like, oh my God, I did that as a Christian too. And I was like, oh, okay. Was this a religious trauma thing and not just like a me being too romantic as a child? But I was the kid who would always do the Mrs. last name to every single boy I liked. I would be in second grade and it'd be like Mrs. Fina, whatever. And I put so much pressure on these decisions of marriage, when to have sex, college, all of these big decisions that I decided at a really young age with not a lot of research or education. And luckily I didn't get married young, and because I think if I would have, I was the type of person where I was so just like, oh my God, well, I just met this guy and I'm gonna marry him. I think if I had actually ever gone through with it, it would have been the wrong decision. I know some folks that got married really young and are so thankful that it ended up turning out really well, but still say like, yeah, I don't love that I got married how young I was, but luckily it didn't like bite me in the butt.
Yeah.
But it can be really anxiety provoking, and it is way too much pressure to put on a child because it happens so often in purity culture where there is just this push and push and push for young kiddos to be adults, whether it's in marriage, whether it's in missions. That's a big one for a lot of religious communities, especially Mormonism. The pressure to put very young children in mission fields is wild.
Is that your background? Were you Mormon?
My partner is Mormon. I was evangelical Christian. My partner was Mormon.
Oh, you said that. Sorry. I just...
No, you're sorry. Fine.
You said that. Yeah. You said that.
No, you're totally fine. Yeah, so he was a Mormon. So I've learned from him a lot of the deep trauma that comes with Mormonism. And
yeah,
there's obviously a pretty intense pressure on missions and evangelical Christianity too, but it is ramped the fuck up in Mormonism in a way that I was not familiar with until I met him. So I think it's... I don't know. Do you want to dive into that a little bit about just the too much pressure to be an adult as a kiddo?
Yeah, I think, and specifically like talking about relationships, purity culture, things like that, there was always this like pressure that if, you know, obviously we're talking about a gender binary here. I, as the person I am now, recognize, you know, genders outside of that binary, but just in the church, I'm speaking about like the lens of the church. You know, if a guy and a girl were a little too friendly, there was always this pressure to like define what that relationship meant. And it, you know, the expectation was that if a guy and a girl were like close friends, that there must be some like romantic element there. And we're talking about like 12, 13 year old children. Like I think about that now, and I think about like the way that I was very like hyper vigilant about my feelings about guys, and like always looking at it through the lens of, is this my future husband? Like, and people who didn't grow up in the church, you're gonna hear me say that and think that sounds wild, and it does, but that was my reality. Like, that's how I thought about relationships with guys. Like, that was a very real thing to me. And I think just that pressure is outrageous. I mean, and that's just, you know, one element of it. You know, you're just taught to, you know, as a 14-year-old girl, you have to be aware of, like, physically your presence and the effect that can have on the men around you. Like, you know, oh, if I'm wearing this t-shirt, you know, I grew up
tempt my brothers.
I graduated
in
high school in 2009. That was the time of low rise jeans and, you know, Hollister t-shirts and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. If your t-shirt rode up a little bit too much, you know, that might be tempting to that 45-year-old dad sitting behind you. You better like be aware of, oh, like, what your child body will make that man do to you. Like,
which also, like what?
Can we acknowledge that that's just breeding fucking pedophiles? Like, it's just a, such
it's
a weird,
so
weird environment. I remember I grew up in a Christian school. And so it was, you know, the dress code was off the charts of like, don't show a shoulder, don't show too much this, don't show too much that. And I dead ass had my 60-year-old pastor or principal come up to me and tell me that I wasn't allowed to wear a certain pair of jeans because they were too tight on my butt. Which, like,
that's so gross.
As a kid, I was like, I was irritated. I remember I was like pissed because I was like, what the fuck? I like these jeans. Like, that's annoying. But nothing in my brain thought of that as like perverted. It wasn't like I wasn't annoyed because it was perverted. I was annoyed because it was inconvenient. I was like, oh, fuck, I got to go change. Are you kidding me? That's so annoying.
Right.
And then as an adult, I was like, oh, that's horrific. That's not just inconvenient. That's a we're really walking on pedophile territory here. We're getting a little too close for comfort. And
so bad.
There's also like, I don't know if you guys ever did this, but it was a really common thing in my youth group to write letters to your future husband. That's another weird one. Like me as a 12-year-old doing journals to my future husband. And I think it just created a whole bunch of kiddos who didn't get to be kiddos. They had to be little tiny missionary housewife replicas instead of being able.
Yeah.
Instead of being able to be silly and be goofy and make mistakes. And it's very icky, and I don't like it. But we don't have time to get into the rest of them for now. Maybe we can unpack it at a different time. But thank you so much for coming on. I know we've been working to get this on the schedule, and I really appreciate you taking the time. And like I said, I've been following your page for a very long time. It has a very close connection to my heart, and it played a big part in the way that I was able to educate myself on sex and purity culture and unpack some of that trauma. And I know you've played a huge role in the lives of other people as well. So thank you for the work that you do. Now that I've dived into the religious trauma work, it's not easy. It's exhausting. It can be really tiring to constantly be unpacking your own trauma on the internet. And so I really appreciate what you've been doing and how long you've been doing it, because you've been doing it for quite a while. And I can imagine it gets exhausting.
Yeah, it does. But, you know, I've spent a lot of time working on my own stuff. I don't think like I could have made this account sooner than I did. You know, I think I really had to work through my own things. Like I did take that time. So I think that was a big part of it.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much. And do you want to share a little bit about where people can find you online if they'd like to follow you and aren't currently?
Yeah, my handle is the same across all platforms that I'm on. So it's Talk Purity to Me, and it's on Instagram. I do have a TikTok, and I am also on Twitter, although not that much. I'm kind of done
Twitter's
with Twitter.
Dying.
Sometimes I'm on there, and I guess
fair enough.
There you could.
Fair enough. Yeah, I've that has funny enough been the response of almost every guest I've had on, where they're like, "Yeah, I have a Twitter. I'm not on there anymore. No one's on there anymore.
Yeah.
But you can follow
Twitter's
me if you want
kind
to."
Kind of dead.
Yeah, Twitter is kind of dead. Also, I just followed you on TikTok because I did not know you had a TikTok. So
yeah,
that's
I
fun.
Did.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for coming on and taking the time again. I really appreciate it. And I also just appreciate, I don't know. Once again, I really can't speak highly enough of creators that do deconstruction content. Cause now that I've dipped my toe into that, I'm like, oof, holy shit.
Yeah,
this is a lot.
It really is.
Thank you for taking the time and taking the energy and doing this as something to help other people. I know a lot of people benefit from it, and it means a lot to a lot of folks. So
thank you.
Yeah,
Well, that's all the time that we have for today. Thank you guys so much for listening. And if you enjoyed the podcast, please rate us 5 stars on iTunes and Spotify and leave us a review. You can also follow the podcast at Mindful Minds Pod and online at mindfulmindspod.com. And you can follow me on TikTok at Fina_Bina, FINA_BINA, for all of my religious trauma and deconstruction content. And as always, to end our time, unclench your jaw, take a deep breath, and remember, you can always learn, you can always grow, and you can always choose to live your life in a more mindful way. I will chat with you guys in 2 weeks.